on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Hello, hello, hello. Good afternoon. Welcome to InvestTalk. This is our November 2nd edition of InvestTalk, and welcome to the 11th month of the year. And as we move into the new month, I'm glad to have you along for the journey. And the market opened the month up on an upswing. So I'll have a market summary in just a moment. And if you have a question for me, you can get through now on the phone, and we will begin answering those questions in just a moment. Our number, as always, is 888-99-CHART. Now, we get many clients and radio podcast listeners looking for help with real estate advice. And one of the most common questions consumers face is, how much house can they afford? Now, me, as a licensed real estate agent and financial advisor, it's my job to make sure buyers are fully aware of the level of financial commitment they are assuming when purchasing a home. Now, most people lose their home because of taking on too much debt, and not due to losing their job or other hardships. Most people think that. They think that it's, oh, you lose your home because of you lost your job or you got sick or something like that. Well, that's certainly true. That does happen. But most people lose their home because they took on too much debt. They bought more house than they could afford. And on average, buyers underestimate the true cost of ownership by about 30%. 30%. That's big. Therefore, it's important to get into any real estate situation with your eyes as wide open as possible so you can avoid these disastrous decisions and avoid emotional decisions. That's really the ultimate goal, is making sure, just like investing, when you're buying real estate, it's the same thing. Avoiding making emotional decisions and getting yourself into trouble. So what I did, and I sent this out to our InvestTalk insiders, I think it was last week or the week before, I prepared an informational sheet that outlines the real monthly costs of home ownership. Now, these are what every buyer should consider as they consider buying a home, either for the first time or moving up to a larger home, just really any real estate purchase. It's called Can You Afford to Buy That House? The 12 Costs of Home Ownership. And here are the items on my list. Obviously, the mortgage payment, that's pretty simple. Then you get into property tax, that can be variable. Homeowners insurance, private mortgage insurance, if you don't put enough down, special taxes and levies such as Belarus, HOA dues, homeowners association dues, how much are those? Will they go up? They usually do. Maintenance and replacement expenses, that's probably the biggest place people underestimate their costs, is how much it costs to maintain a home and replace things that go bad. Then there's utilities. That's usually higher than living in an apartment. So those are the ongoing monthly costs that you need to understand when you're moving. And there are also other one-time costs to consider as well, and hidden costs that a lot of people miss. Some of these would be furnishing and moving costs. That's usually about 1% of the value of the home. That's what most people spend. It's about 1% of the value of the home. You have closing costs, also usually about 1% of the value of the home. Down payment, minimum obviously is 3.5%, but buyers should attempt to put at least 20% down. We always recommend that. Inspections and appraisal fees, that's usually about $1,000, maybe a little bit more sometimes, for these needed services to make sure that the house you're buying is really worth that much and there's not any other major problems that you're overlooking. So that's just four. There are some other ones as well, but those are the main four kind of one-time costs you must consider. Now, being a homeowner can be a great experience, or it can be a headache. It really can. It's up to you to make the right decision, so it's the former and not the latter. Now, if you execute a transaction without full understanding of your obligations, You're setting yourself up to fail. You really are. And I've seen this many, many times. And sometimes it results in a foreclosure. So understanding what you're getting into from the start is extremely important. And any real estate transaction should be considered in the context to your broader financial situation. This is why we always advise clients to have 6 months or more of expenses and savings to limit the total amount of budget allocated to housing to no more than 35% of gross income. 35% of gross income. You're spending more than that's total. Remember all those monthly expenses I was talking about? Add those up. And if it's more than 35% of your gross income, you're probably spending too much on your house. Now, having that discipline is important to long-term financial success. And you can get a copy of this article that I wrote just a week or two ago. It's called 12 Costs of Home Ownership. Just send me a note. Go to investtalk.com. Click on the Contact Justin button and just ask for it. I'll send it right over. Now, do you have a question about real estate? This is when I ask you to join us on the phone or ready for your call. Bring your questions to us. We want to hear from you. Could be about anything money related. 888-99-CHART. That is our anytime number, 888-992-4278. So let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, my name is Corey, and I'm 24 years old and fairly new to investing. I have about $20,000 in a Roth IRA and a mostly Roth 401k. In spring 2014, fearing we'd see a correction, I moved most of my money into fixed interest funds. Do you think it would be a good time to move my money back into stocks? Is it better to move it all at once or just a little bit at a time? Thanks. I appreciate the podcast. I've learned a lot. Bye.
Well, what I would do is first is to, you have $20,000, you know, that's not enough really to get into individual stocks. You probably want to stick with mutual funds now. But what you want to do is create a diversified portfolio for yourself. And do it and understand what that means and understand what type of portfolio you should have. Should you have an aggressive portfolio? Now, typically, investors will say, or the general theory is that you're young, so you should be heavily in stocks. The problem is that some people just don't have the stomach to be all in stocks. Because you go into a bear market goes down 30, 40%. You might freak out and sell, make a rash decision. And we try to get people not to have that mindset on the show. But some people just, they have that, that's just in their blood, just how they are. They're just nervous Nellies. So the big question is, what are you? Are you an aggressive investor? Are you conservative? Are you somewhere in between? And then you have to build a portfolio around that philosophy. And I would do it slowly. You're young. You don't have a lot of experience. So don't try to time the market or anything like that. You do it slowly and dollar cost average over time. That's how you need to do it. And if you want to get into more complex strategies, sure, you can do that. But you need to do that with experience and a lot of studying and watching the market and starting slow. Okay? And then you can start getting into more complex stuff. But for now, find a good portfolio, a good mix of mutual funds, and start allocating towards that and dollar cost average that in over time. Now, individuals see money slipping away and figuring they're holding a bad fund. But looks can be deceiving, so don't be too quick to dump your mutual fund. We're going to talk about why that is, how you should look at performance in context. Everything is in context. Everything's about perspective. Everything, investment decisions are made based on multiple data points, not just one. And so many people get caught up in one. So we're going to talk about that. A mutual fund's coming up on the show. That's our main talking point today. And I also have three other talking points. And really, they're all kind of broad-based. They're all fairly similar. But I think it's important to get to these and give you a sense of how you should be thinking about investing. First, I'm going to get to 7 tips for first-time investors. Then I'm going to get to 7 tips for successful long-term investing. And then I'm going to get to 7 tips for 7 tips of just advice or lessons learned that you should learn, that a lot of people have learned the hard way, and you could learn it the hard way as well, but it's better to learn it from people that have learned it the hard way and take note and make good decisions going forward. So I'm going to talk about that as well. So really 7 strong tips to get you on the right track. I'm Registered Investment Advisor Justin Klein. If you think you're ready, maybe you're overdue for a retirement review, Steve will be in San Jose on November 11th in San Diego County at our La Jolla office on December 2nd. And if you live too far from our California offices, we can meet via Skype or even via telephone. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com, clicking on schedule a meeting, or give us a call at 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
I was curious to see what your opinion would be for RIG, Rig.
Okay. This is RIG. This is Transocean. This is one of the biggest offshore drilling companies in the world. It's about a $6 billion company, which is a lot smaller than it was just a couple of years ago when it was trading in excess of, you know, $80 a share back in 2011, and now it's at $16 a share. So you're certainly looking at it at a huge discount from those levels, but obviously earnings are also hugely discounted from, you know, the peak in 2014 when they made almost $5 a share. Then in 2016, they're only supposed to make 27 cents a share. So that's a big drop. You know, the biggest issue here is obviously oil. Oil prices have dropped dramatically. And offshore drilling just is not economical at these low prices. So you're seeing that, you're seeing Rig have trouble. You're seeing a lot of oil companies have trouble. The big question here is always going to be, what are oil prices going to do? Now, I think they are looking to make a short-term bottom. We've been adding some energy names recently for our clients. Now, this is a very high, this is a high-risk name. So this is one of those boom or busts. If oil prices stay low, they stay around this $40, $50, even probably below $60 level, Rig's going to continue to struggle to be to grow and to remain profitable. But if oil can recover in a sustainable manner, this will fly. So this is going to have a much higher sensitivity to oil prices than, say, an Exxon or a Chevron, right? Or a ConocoPhillips, or, you know, one of the traditional big integrated oil companies. Rig is really tied to how high oil prices are. So if you're looking for a high risk and high reward oil play, then I like it. Are you looking for that, Mike?
Yeah, I was gonna just looking for a trade and possibly, you know, see right now it's been going up, so I was hoping maybe to go to 21 again.
I think that's very possible. In the short term, you know, if oil gets a boost, which, you know, a lot of oil stocks did pretty well today. I think that's very, very possible for Rig. The chart is starting to look bullish. So I think in the near term, I think that's certainly possible. All right, Mike? Thanks for calling. Now, our Invest Talk number is 888-99-CHART. Keep in mind, what may have been right for your portfolio a year ago may not be right for you right now. The market has changed, and maybe your life situation has changed as well. So let's talk about it. Give me a call. We're going to talk to Dan in Palo Alto next, and then you.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast, The SPY ETF. Instant and inexpensive diversification. That's one of our talking points for Tuesday's podcast. We hope you'll be listening then.
Let's go to Dan in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Dan?
Pretty good, Justin. Thank you. Just had 2 quick questions. Listen to you on 1220.
Awesome.
I love your show. They had to do with 2 stocks. One is Holly Frontier, speaking of energy.
Okay.
And the other was Yahoo. I was thinking about going long in both of them if I could get a little dip.
Well, Yahoo, the issue with Yahoo is that it's really tied to Alibaba. If you look at the chart, it's like it just moves almost lockstep with whatever Alibaba does. And Alibaba's been on a pretty large downtrend ever since, I wouldn't say ever since IPO, but soon after its IPO peaked at around $120 a share. And then it went down to 60, and now it's back up to 84, but it's still making lower highs. So, you know, and the problems in China, and, you know, I'm just, I don't completely understand Baba's business. And it, there's so, they do so many things. And there's so many, there's counterfeit products and all that stuff. So I'm not just not a big fan of that. So Yahoo, it's cheap. I'll say that. And I don't hate it. But, you know, it hasn't shown enough for me to say, okay, this is a company that's turning around and that can sustain its business over the long term and can compete with Google. So I wouldn't be looking to buy Yahoo yet. I think you're right to have it on your watch list, but there's no sustainable turnaround coming in Yahoo, at least from what I see. And then you're looking at Holly Frontier, and this is an oil. This is in the business of producing high-value light petroleum products such as gasoline, diesel fuel, and jet fuel. So they're a refiner, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You know, the biggest issue is that refiners have done well recently because the demand for gasoline has actually increased. Oil prices have dropped, so what they call the crack spread has actually increased, and that's been good for refiners. And so Holly Frontier and other refiners like Valero have done fairly well, right? The issue is if oil's bottomed, won't that reverse?
Oh, I see.
Right? And I think that's the issue. Now, they don't have a lot of debt. It's trading relatively cheaply, but earnings are supposed to fall 21% next year. Why is that? Is that because analysts are expecting that crack spread to come back down? You know, so its earnings are just all over the place. That's one thing I don't like. I like to see consistent earnings from a company, and their earnings are all over the place. You can't even believe. In 2008, they made $1.18. The next year, they only made 15 cents. Then went all the way up to $8.34 in 2012. Then down to $3.77 the next year. Then $2.66. Now back up to $5.14 this year. And then back down $4 next year. Extreme volatility, you know?
I'm convinced. Have you got time for one more if I wanted to ask?
Sure, go for it.
Caterpillar. I was just thinking they were looking strong.
Caterpillar. Well, Caterpillar is kind of in the same boat as that Holly Frontier, a little bit more consistent in its earnings. The mining sector, if commodities have bottomed, which I think we're very close to a bottom in commodities, I really do. Caterpillar, I think, will actually do pretty well because there's a lot of pessimism built into it. And their dividend looks sustainable. So, you know what? I'm going to say out of those three, Caterpillar would be my number one. If I was going to pick one of the three. Now, I don't love it. I'm not going to say I love it. But if I'm picking one of the three, I'm picking Caterpillar.
I hear you. Thank you, man.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Dan. Now let's take a quick look at the market today. I know we didn't do that at the top of the show. We had the S&P up 25 points, the NASDAQ up 73. Big move for the NASDAQ. And the Dow is up 165 points. You had oil and most commodities were relatively flat. Let's see, what was... Yeah, relatively flat. But it was interesting. A lot of the oil sector did really well. XLE... The energy ETF had a very, very nice day today, which is telling me that the market's starting to love the commodity space or like the commodity space a little bit more. And extreme pessimism is coming off and getting a little bit more optimistic. And that tells me that oil prices or commodity prices are going to start creeping up in the near term. Now, is that sustainable? I'm not sure. but that's what the market's kind of telling me at the moment. For the broader indexes, we're still into a lot of resistance, but it hasn't really affected it too much over the past week or week and a half, even though it's been into resistance. So we haven't gotten over that final resistance hurdle yet. I think we're going to have to wait until probably the end of this week, see what happens with the job report, and then we'll know a little bit more. You have the jobs report you have car sales tomorrow. You have the jobs report at the end of the week. You have a lot of economic news, which has been fairly weak. Still has been fairly weak, but the market doesn't seem to care. So just a quick update on the market. Started the month on a positive note. Now we've reached the half-hour mark in the hour. And if you're a podcast listener, you'd like to talk to me live. InvestTalk is produced every weekday afternoon from 4 to 5 Pacific time. And our line is open then at 888-99-CHART, just like it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
This is Invest Talk for Monday, November 2nd. Warren Buffett famously says he doesn't invest in what he doesn't understand. So how do you find out what you need to know about a company? Or what's your question? The line is open at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 25 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call in, do it now. Now, don't judge your losing 401k just by recent performance. And I see this a lot, and we get questions like, oh, I have these funds in my 401k, and I'm down. Should I sell them? Or I have these in my IRA or my brokerage account, and I'm down. Should I sell them? And during periods like we've gone through recently, you know, when the market drops quickly, I know we've made a lot of it back, but when the market drops quickly, it can destroy performance very quickly for mutual funds. And people look at them and say, oh, they're garbage. These are terrible investments. They jump to conclusions. But really, the looks can be deceiving. And you know, you can look at any large cap mutual fund over the past. If you look from August through, when was the bottom? You know, end of September, say. And it's going to be down 7, 8, 9%. Whereas short-term government bonds are going to be probably up or maybe, you know, flat. And you're going to say, well, that looks great. But the problem is that's just short-term thinking, short-termism. Chasing performance in both ways. So this is, and you have to realize that stocks and bonds, they run in cycles. For a while they'll be good, and then suddenly they won't be. And usually investors jump on a bandwagon closer to the end of that cycle rather than the beginning. You know, international stocks have not been doing well recently compared to domestic stocks. But guess what? I have a very high confidence level that 5 or 10 years from now, foreign stocks will have outperformed U.S. stocks over that time frame. Because for so many years now, domestic stocks have been outperforming, and these are just the ebbs and flows of the market. And what you have to look at is the performance through multiple cycles. So you look at last 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And usually that doesn't encompass a full cycle, bull and bear markets. So you want to look at funds that have 10 plus year track records. How do they do through the bull and the bear cycles? Then you can get a sense of how good of a fund it is. And I'm not talking about whether they're up or down in bull or bear cycles. I'm talking about what they did compared to their peers, meaning other funds that are in the same category. You can't compare a real estate mutual fund with a small cap growth fund or a emerging market bond fund. They're all completely different animals. And if you start to try to compare them, you're just fooling yourself. You're using bad data. And it's going to result in a bad decision. So always compare your fund to the average fund that's just like it. Meaning if it's a large cap growth fund, what were the other large cap growth funds doing over that 10, 15 year period? If it's a high yield bond fund, what are the other high yield bond funds doing over that 10, 15 year period? Okay, and you can compare them. We always talk about Morningstar.com. It's a great tool. You should go there and always look at that and make sure you understand what the performance figures mean in context. Have perspective. Don't use them on their own. We do this all the time when we have 401k meetings. We do enrollment meetings for companies, right? And I've seen this before. We try to guide the employees to use the models, that the risk-based models that we have set up, and we give them a risk questionnaire, and we make sure that they're tied into the right risk that they're that they should be taking based on who they are. But then there's always those few that want to go rogue and they want to do it themselves, and we say, okay, that's fine, they want to do it themselves, and we give them the standard forms, and on the forms it has what the previous returns were over the last 3, 5, 10 years. And they just sit there and they're like, oh, well, this one did well the past 3 years. This one did, you know, and that's how they do it. That's it. It's all they look at, and they start to make decisions. It's not how you make the decisions, people. So be aware of that. Now, don't save your questions. We want to hear from you. I have a question. If you have a question that is about the basics, we're here for you, whether you are an experienced investor or just a beginner. Does not matter. We can handle all types of questions. 888-99-CHART is the number. Let's go to Jeff in Marietta. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Justin, it's Jeff again. Hey, I got a question on your website, you know, on some of the different funds. There's that IVR one. And you know, it's been down pretty low right now, like around the $12 range. But if I'm reading this right.
This is on our site?
Yeah, it was on your site. You know, one of the other, you know, I don't know if it's an ETF or just one of the overall, you know, index funds, I believe.
Okay, I'm not sure where you found it, but go ahead. Okay, IVR. This is Invesco Mortgage Capital. They invest in finance, manage residential and mortgage commercial-backed securities and loans. So this is a mortgage REIT.
Okay, and it's showing like a 13-plus yield?
Yes.
So what's your, you know, assessment of that?
This is very typical. I've seen this for the past 5 years. Everyone's chasing these mortgage REITs. And what they do is they're like almost like a bank, but they borrow a bunch of money and they invest it in mortgage-backed securities. So when things are going well in the mortgage-backed space, it's fine. But when things are not going so well, they will blow up. And this is extremely high risk, and they already have. I mean, look at this. This is a stock that went from $16 a share down to $12 in just 4 months. So great, you're getting 13%, but you just lost 30%.
Yeah. Okay.
So who cares?
Yeah,
and this is typical of these type of companies. So this is a good example, and this is one thing I'm going to get to in a little bit. Never chase yields. And we've seen this time after time after time after time after time after time after time. That don't look at that 13% and say this is a great investment. Or even you barely want to entertain it. To me, that's a giant red flag. If you're seeing right now things that have 9, 10, 12, 15% yields, you want to say, what the hell is wrong with this? Where are the giant risks involved? Because there are. Now, you might say those risks are ill-founded and they're not going to come to fruition anytime soon. Sure. But you need to understand what those risks are. And if you
right.
don't, you're going in blind. And the risks are here is that if interest rates rise, the value of their mortgages that they hold are going to go down in value. Right? And their borrowing costs are going to go up. So their profitability is going to sink. And that's exactly what you've mm-hmm. seen already. This is a company that made $3.78 a share back in 2010. Next year they're supposed to make $1.72. And why is that? Because they aren't even making enough to pay their dividend. They're borrowing money to pay their dividend. This is what these companies do. They're issuing debt to pay their dividend. This is a horrible way to allocate capital. And it's terrible for shareholders. So stay away from mortgage REITs.
Okay.
Okay.
On the AT&T that pays a dividend or like a dividend ETF
mm-hmm.
or a preferred stock, do you have a preference between, you know, those scenarios?
Well, those are, you know, traditional big companies. You know, if you buy a preferred index or something like that, obviously you're more diversified. You know, there's all have their merits. All are fine mm-hmm. companies. I wouldn't say you know, you're not giving us the specifics to tell me for me to tell you which one's better than the other.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like for example, the storage company, I forget the name of it right now. You know, one of the major storage companies.
Uh-huh.
They've got a preferred stock, you know, and it pays you know pretty good dividend. But I don't know if that's just to generate income or if you want to reinvest it in the preferred. They don't seem to be quite as volatile.
Yeah, preferreds are less volatile. And remember, preferreds are kind of between the bond and stock, right? If they go
right.
bankrupt, the stockholders usually go get nothing. Then the preferred holders are ahead of the stockholders, but bondholders are ahead of the preferred holders. And preferreds are less liquid, so they're not traded as often.
Right.
So yeah, right. you're going to have a lot less volatility. Depends what type of investor you want to be. You want to have something that's steadier. Then you know that's where preferreds are going to come in, and they're going to keep their payments, right? If you, for example, you have the preferred or public storage, for example, and you have the
that's
common
the one
stock,
I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
So the
common stock, they can cut their dividend, right? If profitability drops, they can cut their dividend. They're going to be the first ones to get their dividend cut. Whereas preferred, you're not going to get that dividend cut, right?
Right. And I understand even if the stock value goes down, you still get the when they call it, you still get the coupon value.
Yes.
So like if it was $25 and went
yes.
down to 20,
yes.
if and when they call it, you still get your $25 back plus
yep.
the dividend.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, appreciate that. Always, you know, I just more recent listeners, so, you know, I appreciate you guys educating us, and then maybe I can come out and see you guys sooner than later.
All right, sounds good, Jeff. Thanks for giving us a call. Call again soon. Let's go to Nelson in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Nelson?
For a stock symbol, the VNTV. What are you thinking?
VNTV? Is that?
It's the technology for chips.
Let me look at this. I've never heard of this company. VNTV. This is Vantiv Inc. Provides a suite of payment processing services to retailers, merchants, and financial institutions across the U.S. Pretty solid growth in the 30% range over the past five quarters, except for the last quarter. It dropped down to about 17%, so that's waning a little bit, but still pretty solid. You have earnings growth in the high teens to low 20%. That's stayed pretty intact. They do have a lot of debt. That worries me a little bit. You know, the 365% debt-to-equity ratio, that's certainly above average. And let's see, what's their volatility of the earnings? They've always been pretty profitable. It's from 2008 on. And it's been going during a recession, they had some trouble, but a lot of companies did. And they've been growing ever since then. Positive free cash flow, I like that. It's about a 5% free cash flow yield. That's pretty solid. Return on equity is 19%. That's solid, but the issue, the biggest thing is that they are using a lot of leverage to get that. Their return on assets is only 2.5%. That's not very high, but they are growing pretty nicely. It did spike up recently. I'm assuming that's earnings, the recent spike 3-4 days ago?
I believe, yes.
Yeah. You know what? I don't hate it. You know, it's not super expensive. My biggest issue is that debt. There's a lot of debt, and they did start to pay down a little bit, but they have a lot of free cash flow to handle it. You know, I'm going to say I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
No problem, Nelson. Let's go to Max in Half Moon Bay. How are you doing, Max? Max, you there?
Yes.
How's it going? What can I do for you?
Hi. Yes, sir. Thank you so much for the excellent program, Justin.
No problem.
I would like to ask if you would comment a general question I have. The relationship between the growth of GDP and the level of S&P 500. And the reason I'm asking is, if we are going through a long period of low or negative GDP growth compared to the historical numbers, doesn't that imply that S&P 500, generally speaking, should not or could not rise significantly unless it's, I want to say, unless people pay too much for it?
Yeah. There have been a lot of studies relating to the growth in a stock market versus GDP, and all the studies show that there's not really any good relationship, in especially in the near term. Long term, yeah, there is, very long term, but you know, over a year, 2, 3, 4, 5 year time frame, there's not a lot of strong correlation. So you know, just look at the past 5 years. We've had very modest GDP growth, but the market's gone up dramatically, right? So there's really not a whole lot tied to it. Now, if we go into a recession, almost always the stock market will drop. How much it drops is always difficult to know. It's, you know, how much is going to feed into the credit markets, things like that. How much debt there is out there, and margin debt there is, that will indicate how much it will drop, etc. But don't think that, just look at China. China's growing 7%, but its stock market's going down a lot. So don't think that you're growing X if the stock market should grow Y. Yeah, you know, there's not that good relationship. Thanks for the call, Max. Now, what do InvestTalk insiders know that you may not? You should go and sign up. Go to InvestTalk.com. Look for InvestTalk Insider.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. For your information, we have a webinar scheduled this month. By popular demand, the topic will be building a strong portfolio with less risk and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. The date is November 18th. The time is 6:30 Pacific Time. And please save the date. Sign up will be soon.
Syed in Houston. How you doing, Syed?
Hey. Great show. I hooked up every day. I listen to your show. It's really great. Appreciate for the show.
Well, we appreciate you listening.
My question is, I had this SCX short position in options.
Okay. So you bought some puts?
I short the calls.
Oh, okay,
you know,
got you.
Sold the calls.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got a notification for a dividend part, that something like that, you know. So my question are as follows. Number one, I understand that there is a dividend date. Mm-hmm. And then since I have a short position, I should pay the dividend. But whenever I have a long position in calls and they are in the money, I never got dividend. So why, if you have a short, you have to pay?
On the options, you shouldn't, the dividend shouldn't affect, you shouldn't have to pay it, or you don't get it either. So I don't.
No, I have a notification.
Are you sure it's just not telling you that there is a dividend? It's actually telling you you owe it.
No, they said there is a dividend date coming, and since you have a short position, which was only in options, so they said it, you will be, I mean, dividend will be cut something, you know.
Is this an option that's expired already, or it's still has time value?
No. That was still having like another 4 weeks, I think, before expiring.
Okay. And is it in the money?
It's in the money, yes.
Okay. So probably what it's saying is that if it gets put to you, you're going to be short that stock, right?
This is not what it said. I understand what you are saying if it is put, but this doesn't say. It says the dividend date is coming, and since I have a short position, I will be liable to pay the dividend. Something, you know, stuff like that technically. So
I understand what you are saying, but it
didn't say it has to be put. It doesn't say that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it's telling you that, because you shouldn't owe it unless you actually are short the stock. So I would call them and ask them that it doesn't, you're not actually short, right? Because you just have sold a call option, right? That's in the money.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Absolutely.
So you're down on it. Absolutely. Right?
Right. It was moving up, and since I was short, so it was moving up. But it has not been put to me. But the notification from TD Ameritrade was very clear that since I own a short position and dividend date is coming, and that was, you know,
it sounds I don't know why they would tell you that, except for maybe the fact that they know that it could be put to you at any time, and as soon as it is, then you will owe that dividend. You know, whoever holds that option can just put the stock to you, and now you're short it, and now you're going to owe that dividend.
So what you are saying is unless somebody own the stock, call or put in a long way or short way, he's not liable for.
Just like owning a stock. I mean, if you own a call option, and the company pays a dividend, you don't get that dividend. You don't own the stock. You own right to own the stock, right? You have the right to own that, and that's what all an option is. It's the right to. Okay, and until you actually are an owner, or you are short that stock, you're not going to owe it, and you're not going to get it unless you own it. So
I absolutely agree with you.
Yes.
Okay, so, I will check with TD Ameritrade.
Yeah, I would call TD Ameritrade, because that doesn't. The only thing I can imagine, like I said, is they realize that you are holding you are short and in the money call option, and it can be put to you at any time, which then you'd be short the stock, and then you'd owe the dividend. But until that time, you know, obviously you don't. So, but whoever owns that call option can put it to you whenever, and then you'll owe it. So they're just probably warning you on that, my guess. But I would call them.
Okay, very quick. Thanks a lot for this. Very quick, for the gold is keep pulling back right now. Mm-hmm. You think it's gonna go up?
I think commodities have made a bottom, and I do think it's a buying opportunity. Thanks for calling, Syed. Our hour is up. Steve and I thank you for investing this hour with us. A reminder of Steve's new checkup dates in San Jose, November 11th. You can reserve your hour by going to investtalk.com, clicking on schedule a meeting. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.